All right, so without further ado, I'm going to bring up Peter Barrett.
Peter Barrett.
Yeah, Peter Barrett is a writer, an artist, a musician, and he's currently based down the street from me in East Falls.
Yay!
With his lovely fiance, Courtney Manbrick. He was born in Chicago and raised in Norman, Oklahoma, and is a graduate of Washington University in St. Louis and Temple Law School. His latest chapbook is Ski, Oklahoma. His novel, Long Green, is currently available at a little website known as Amazon.com. His work has been published in Philadelphia Poets, Mad Poets, Schuylkill Valley Journal, ParlorJournal.com, and Legal Studies Forum, among others. And he is the 2009 recipient of the Amy Trish Neal Award in Poetry. Fantastic. Please welcome Peter.
Well, I'm just going to dive right in, I guess. This first poem is called Florida. Some conversation among the night people triggered the memory, made me recall the sounds of choppers down the boulevard, the sickly warm breeze from up from the beach, and the lines outside the nightclubs. An evening's thrill concocted out of hard cider and bathed in Eddie Van Halen solo. Wasn't she there those years ago, this girl from the other night, the one with the garish blonde hair, taking part in a doomsday celebration out of a Hieronymus Bosch painting? Satyrs chasing Amazons, philosophers shooting crafts, students rioting for no other reason than the night was warm and the streets inviting. The morning spent in bed with nameless women, subtropical mayhem just around the corner, like the footfalls of a pimp scurrying indoors. The order that we go by seems so thin now, like it could crack apart at any moment, like some unfortunate store window, and we would all begin charging in for the stereos and the TV sets newly available, or lusting after suntanned women, Cuban women, African. In the motels and in the streets, driven on by jungle rhythms, or by-the-by ordering brightly colored drinks at the bar. Phosphorescent nighttime delusions of a heady Elan, glowing like signs on the main drag and driven by a rock star's wild abandon. If we listened to all the lyrics, we would know, wouldn't we, the glory and the gore of it, of things that almost happened and things that happened. Running with the bulls of Pamplona or the girls from Tampa Bay. And tonight, the night people, they must be the right people, staring at the embers of an age lost and found, thinking about a bikini that came unstrung, about the garment that was cast away, about a girl that surrendered her top to the New Orleans night, thinking about the drawers kicked across the floor, about charging up the street like a fullback from the state university, up the middle for a 5-yard gain, full of Mahler, the Rolling Stones, the Doors, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Thank you. This next one was actually the Amy Trish Neal Award winner. It's called Earth Mother. It's about my grandmother. What I know of my German grandmother is shorthand and scant, dying as she did riding her motorcycle struck by a drunk driver nearly 30 years before my Chicago birth, a world war, and a fortunate ocean away. But I thought the way that she died says something about the way she lived. She was a breed of female hippie in 30s Germany, an anomalous light shed upon a violently darkening landscape with its soon-to-come world of blitzes, so horribly misnamed as shots of illumination. She played the violin, performed a recital at Heidelberg's concert hall, graduated gymnasium, unheard of for a woman, and was a pharmacist by profession. Some facts taken from a woman's life that led through vegetarianism, nudism, and the expressions of the Zoroastrian Mazda Sanan. At times I think about the band of people she must have known, how certain lives seem to go unspoken for today, how exotic, exemplary corners of existence have been swallowed up by harsh authoritarianisms, totalitarianisms. I picture her as a cultivated wild seed, a free spirit, uncompromisingly and angrily so, especially with Hitler, that dwarfish, dark-age nightmare who would lead a world of flirt with ultimate destruction. I wonder if it was anti-fascist defiance led her to rev her machine to Heidelberg, a scenic city in a country turning ugly, as the Gothic spires of its ancient university look down upon the coming apocalypse. Or maybe it was a simple love of some sort of absolute freedom. Freedom, though, seems always as measured against something else. Thuggery and conformity, distorted men and women going mad on a malignant fairy tale of a philosophy. Alongside speed, she loved nature, the water, and was as familiar with herbs and flowers as I tend to be alienated from them. On some dappled day, she would lead her children onto fields of wild raspberries. What have I inherited? Maybe a free and righteous blood rising in me at inopportune times, like when I refused to talk to the doctor who had never heard of Nietzsche, and I looked to his uninformed kind as illegitimately powerful postmodern hooligans. So at times I've let nature take over myself, but I also think she surfaces in me as I ride down the open road, born to be wild. For perhaps my grandmother could best be thought of as a sort of a female Steppenwolf, a little at odds with civilization, wandering her own path against the stiff shock of barbaric wind. This next one is called Poem for Dean Paul Martin. That's Dean Martin's son who died in a plane crash. I swear, brother, this isn't going to be about saying goodbye at 35, or leaving dad's head hanging, or leaving a generation to curl up with Reagan and reaction. No, this is going to be about fast cars, faster planes, and fastest of all, the women rolling out of bed at 4 a.m. for their modeling jobs, leaving a twisting trail of negligee behind on gilt-edged Beverly Hills bathroom floors. Consider it a fan letter of sorts destined for the seventh heaven on whose winged beachhead you must now lie. This is going to be about flying out of Oklahoma City in your own turboprop, interior designed by my father with his Bauhaus touch, spiced with southwestern sepias and sunset oranges, oil business blues and grays. Did you ever stop to take it all in? And where were you headed? There's no itinerary for me to peruse. Only a black and white glossy which hangs on my wall, filigreed with a starry star's smile. A Buddha's grin which speaks volumes without saying a word. So where was it to next, Captain? Vegas, Miami, L.A.? They say you were nice, a bit of a tennis bum, good behind the wheel. So what sort of Valhalla are you lying in, surrounded by what sort of sad, beautiful tangle of wasted angelic starlets, dead too young of anorexia or heroin OD? Is James Dean anywhere to be found? I'm missing your advice. Advice along with Coburn's and the Queens. I wonder what your school of cool might have to say about me. I read the classics once. I like jazz, but I'm down here in a world on fire. Send the hook and ladder, brother. This next poem is about a guy I met in college. He was kind of inspiration for me. Thinking about James. The temperature would fall about 100 degrees when he entered the room. He was down with it. You could almost hear the jazz chords being strummed as he walked on in like the groove masters before him from the beginning of the civil rights movement to the present day. He was free, liberated. He was like you and me would be after another 10 years of evolution. The women loved him. The men admired him. He was out against it, the war, oppression. He was for it, women's rights, affirmative action. He took a cocktail in his hands, a gin fizz for digestion. The music would start again for real. I think it was Funky Broadway by Dyke and the Blazers, an oldie too hot for the oldie stations to play. He entered the room and the party would never be the same. He would take a sip from his glass and lay an incantation of a poem, a remembrance of Hughes, Baldwin, Robeson. The women relaxed. The men would steel themselves for the night to come. And I would be relieved that this new world would be safe for another day. Okay, we've had a lot of baseball. Now I'm going to write a poem, read a poem about soccer. Soccer star. Yaya Toure for FC Barcelona. How is it to play the ball every time as though it is the most beautiful thing in the world that anybody is doing at that particular moment? I mean, Marilyn Monroe is dead. Billy Kidd retired from pro skiing. Pele, Eusebio, Cruyff, all retired. I watch you when you're like a band leader or a very hip beach bum scaring up a game in the sand in Rio or somewhere like that. I guess the club played good money, millions for you, but isn't it about a little bit more than being a professional? It's what you give to a culture, like Sinatra always hitting the right note. Was that just money? The Beckhams have moved to the City of Angels, and tonight David hits on a long free kick, but you make love to the ball like Elizabeth Taylor downs a glass of champagne. Yes, even in Southern California, supposed land of beauty, it is wretched excess to watch you at the Rose Bowl improvising at the beautiful game among your teammates. Like Carson does many years ago, improvising on some Art Fern Tea Time movie fumbled joke. I guess it's a ridiculous parallel, but while in L.A. you should get lost in Mobile and drive once or a few times, taste Napa Valley wine. You should have met Charo in her prime. Again and again, I'm coming up short and trying to portray your appeal. You play like Wes Montgomery strums a guitar, something I'm listening to more and more all the time. It's the most beautiful thing in the world, but more. A few have been inspired by the seashore, and this is one of them. It's called Child of the Elements. I approach the ocean, the loud, blue, deadly, beautiful, uncaring, eternal flood by the beach, and I felt the layers fall away. The clothing, the artifice of our days, the shame we felt holding on to one another on some city street. For a moment I hesitated, but the moment was short as the glint of light on a wave. I would let the elements have their way this bright April afternoon, the sun beating down as in some tale of undoing in Gide or Mon. I was to be undone, too. The career set for resumption on Monday began to evaporate in my mind. I would buy an open MG, cruise the blue hotels, find some job to get me by if need be, perform yoga in some loft with you, where postures might dissolve into something more carnal and animal, and spirit would bloom into body and sense, only a thin line between the two. The music from another time here, more Adamite. A day when nature had its way. Anarchy, you say. I say the sun, the earth, the tides have their own order. When we hit civilization again, it might provide its own charm or balm, but I will probably again find that I don't quite fit in with the ordered gardens and the church finery of the people there. Longing I will to find third gear again, alongside the breakers with you, bronze hair coppered by naked light, with the unadorned blues of some broken gambler in the dark playing out of Atlantic City. This one's called Lists. What was her name? I'm trying to remember, but it's lost. Lost in the haze of summer and the craze of adolescence. I remember the Holiday Inn pool back in Oklahoma and a friend working at the motel as a bellboy and how I used to sneak in leaving my bike at the gate and my friend's smirk under a rakish, oaky mustache. And this girl and I were making out in the pool and her fingernails flared a bright orange as my hand fell under her bathing suit. And then we had submarine sandwiches somewhere on campus, and another friend was there, with his girlfriend, but her name, the name of my girl, has been gone for decades, Oklahoma City, Albuquerque, Phoenix, Barstow. I remember her laugh, St. Louis, Philadelphia, where she was from, Chicago, New York, where she was headed, Heidelberg, Budapest, I have no idea. I have no recollection of how old she was, or I was, or where she went to school. But she was there, laughing in a summer afternoon, and she was part of my history, and I hers, lazy, hazy, crazy, Larry, Curly, Moe, John, Paul, George, Ringo, Marx, Engels, Einstein, Freud, Jesus. People who come and go, who have come and gone, and this memory that sticks, that dwells in the back corridors of my mind on a sunny day and an intimate stranger. It's all right, Jesus. I know it hurts, I know it, man. The time for glory may be gone, and I don't even have a name. I don't even have a name. Thank you. This one's called Budapest Moment. The ancient, exotic, sex-flooded city lies curled up next to the Danube like a worn-out prostitute. Here she lies fetally among wet ropes of blanket, blinking in the noon light after a night's arduous tasks. And here men and women seek to preserve something sparkling, like a diamond among the fetid coal dust of history. Scenes of now ancient and obsolete communist statues loom like nuclear shadows. Dreams and nightmares of dictatorship and emergence, freedom and escape, appear like the walls and walls of graffiti. And Arpaud looks down upon it all. Meet a fascist cabbie, another one hustling to get ahead amongst the obscenity of billboard capitalism and the bandstand beat of a victorious America. Meanwhile, Marilyn Monroe, or perhaps Anna Nicole Smith in Levi's, caresses herself with vulgar leer on Parliament steps, the city alive, growing, groaning, flailing, inert, corrupt, beautiful, painted, flotsam and jetsam at the end of Occident and the beginning of Orient. Stories, faculty, neighborhoods, places where people were schooled, worked, hid out, were massacred, survived, dined in imperial decadence, swam among the dizzying waves in sensual delight, took part in military exercises, sat in dessert-laden cafes eating cakes and drinking absinthe. Stories countless and filed away in infinite folders, yet remembered with Proustian exactness. A fool's golden paradise with parchment maps pointing out exactly where to go. Looking for the real Hungary, from Cleveland to New Brunswick, New Jersey, to Budapest, to provincial town, scuffling gypsy, sun-aged and brown like the earth, scrapping to get by, body tilted, half-cocked, digging ditches, or listening to winds east and west while selling watches with linen hands. The poets, exiled, dead, haunted by spirits of frustration, and mascaraed women in gauze skirts disappearing off the next streetcar, the message is and around the next block. The message is clear. It's not about how long you live. It's about how you live. This is my commentary on race relations. Blues for the Sidekick. The scene is a movie that took place in St. Louis or Cincinnati, a river city a shade north to be south. And was the black guy who taught Dean Martin or Steve McQueen to shoot craps right, or was it to bed women and make them cry out, or to feel the blues for real? Maybe it was a shoeshine guy with a PhD in street and mudhole and riverboat who could sing as sweetly as the Mills Brothers, and was poignant because he would be the guy that led the leading man's soul. Maybe Blocked for Joan Namath and was glad to do it because gypsy bohunks and soul brothers were often just about the same color. And there were places that the two could meet, smoky bars, the horse races. I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere. And because it was a movie, the end would feature the camera panning wide with the white guy heading uptown or out to West County and the black man heading for the Dan River. And the music would always be something like Sinatra singing This Town, or else some Hugo Montenegro forgotten swinging track, Jimmy Smith and Wes Montgomery, perhaps. And though the black man had never been closer to Africa than Pittsburgh, he could take the credit for having baptized the white man in the waters not only of the Mississippi, but the darkest upriver of the Nile, or the Zambezi, or the Congo. The scene was America, of course, and it was a two-way deal of sorts, with a man who had next to nothing happy to save the situation, though the debutante wife back in the chandeliered manse in the heaven that was Shaker Heights or Ladue might never know his name. I just have a couple more left here. Mercifully. Road to Gabor Szabo. Gabor Szabo is a jazz guitarist, heavily gypsy influence from Hungary originally. Beyond the furthest reaches of the West, beyond the steppes, beyond the pale, at a fire, at a gypsy camp, let us try to make sense of the isms of the past century, of West Coast Hungarians and heroin and actresses and movie stars and Manson families and the thrust of modern jazz and the thing that chopped through the music like multicolored adrenaline that made men race cars and date beautiful educated young women and think that war was a drag, that made men who were Marines become hippies, and men who were hippies go to India, and made the young flex their muscles, and the people of color celebrate their hues, their food, their culture, their dress. of the lonely Hungarians of the New World caught on ski slopes or in concert halls who remember the gypsy camps and the concentration camps and the acid trips and Pushkash's goals and Namus hits and the bombs and the ghettos. This exploration is now going deep into the evening like a heady discussion having to do with all the problems of the world, of the isms and the schisms and the rhythms. There is a vision of what was there, a time for seekers, for the upended and exiled to unendingly endure and find a tomorrow, not an amalgam of yesterdays. We all know what happened yesterday. But a new, very old day, a 10,000-year-old future, a passage of tragedy and Mahler turning victorious. For my memory is long, longer than a day at the stock market, longer than the last cell phone call. Memory like a rock to Proust, an anchor to ancient prophets, makes today a bubble to be blown away. And this is my old closer, and I'm going to, I guess I'll read it next. That'll be it. You're off the hook after that. Movie in the movies. Chuck would have survived even if Ed Meese and Nancy Reagan would have been declared king and queen of North America. Chuck would have survived even if that thing in my basement really would have been explosives. Chuck would have survived even if they paved over Baltimore Avenue and built a giant Neiman Marcus and 15 strip malls instead. Chuck would have survived even if they closed down all the speakeasies and you had to get Colt 45 at some old man's bar. Chuck would have survived even if they declared the University of Pennsylvania to be a psychedelic research institute and a complex of massage parlors and built a dog track around Franklin Field and let the old professor back into the computer room. Chuck would have survived even if the West Catholic Alumni Association had revoked his membership and barred him from the annual reunion. Chuck would have survived even if the penicillin were bad and most of his extremities withered away. Chuck would have survived even if all the Italians in America were made to walk and talk like Abe Bartlett Giamatti. Chuck would have survived even if some of the girls in 47th decided that they didn't need the money that badly anymore. Chuck would have survived even if a shore party beamed down from planet Zircon demanding rap records and marijuana cigars. Chuck would have survived even if he were the last white man on Earth and wouldn't give a damn either. Chuck would have survived even if everyone in the suburb had developed terminal tennis elbow and mislaid amongst Prozac prescriptions. Chuck would probably survive a gun to his head because the brothers would sooner kick Gary Cooper in the shins. Chuck would have survived. I suppose that's a greedy thing. Thank you very much.